Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Good afternoon and good morning, West Coast. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on my brand new premiere show, Recovery Recharged, with the illustrious Dr. Pat.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Pat. I'm right here sitting in a co-pilot seat, ready to just fire it up.
Okay, we're ready to go. Thanks so much for joining us today. I have a very special guest today on our Recovery Recharge show. First of all, the show is called Recovery and the Celebrity Spotlight. So that should really give you a good idea of what's coming next. I have the honor and privilege of presenting to you the Emmy-nominated actor Michael O'Leary. And Michael O'Leary, you will recognize as a veteran actor for his 26-year starring role as Dr. Rick Bauer on the U.S. soap opera Guiding Light. Dr. Pat, did you know it was the longest running show in broadcast history?
You know, I didn't know it was the longest, but I got to tell you, I know it was like long. I you know, like as somebody that knows a little bit about those shows, yeah, just a little, I it's like the forever show is what I used to call it.
Michael, the first episode was in 1937.
That's correct. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, okay, but I know you weren't there that long.
No.
I was just going to say, Michael, you look really good.
Oh, thank you.
He ages well. He's also been on countless popular nighttime shows like Law and Order and the current new NBC drama, New Amsterdam. He's also appeared on the web series Venice, which is a soap opera series now in its fifth and final season. He completed a co-starring role in an upcoming motion picture called The Glorious Resurrection of Claire Owens. And that's a film written by Joseph Craig and directed by Craig and Frank Mazzari. And currently, his award-winning writing and producing credits include Steamboat, the web series on Roku, which was nominated for 12 Indie Awards, and most currently, his award-winning play that deals with recovery called Breathing Under Dirt with internationally acclaimed director Larry Moss, which we're going to talk about a little later today. Michael, welcome to Recovery Recharged. How are you?
Thank you, Ellen. Boy, this has been kind of an emotional morning for me because I decided to go public with my recovery on Facebook this morning, and and I contacted my two daughters just to give them a heads up, just to let them know that we're going to talk about this today. But I just felt like the time is right because, you know, for those who are out there, you know, struggling with substance abuse issues, I'm like living proof, I guess, that, you know, you don't have to live that way anymore. And my life has really changed as a result of not drinking a day at a time.
When did you first realize that there was a problem?
Oh, boy. Do you know, I always believed that I was an alcoholic before the alcohol took over me. And that for somebody who doesn't drink, that may, you may scratch your head and say, what do you mean by that? But yeah. I've always been restless and irritable and discontent. And for me, I was the beer drinker. I didn't drink a lot of beer when I was growing up as a kid. But when I drank a lot of it, and I got drunk. And so, but I never had, in my 20s and 30s, I never had alcohol in the house. If I did, it was, you know, it was a beer, but beer didn't do it for me. And I remember when my family moved from New York to Montclair, and a neighbor dropped off a box of Chardonnay. And all of a sudden, this alcoholic found something that I could drink a lot of. And I was kind of off to the races. So somewhere in 2003, 2004, somewhere in there, I think I realized that drinking became a priority for me.
Wow. Did anybody know about your drinking, or did you think you were keeping it a secret?
Well, certainly my family knew about it. I think a lot of people that I worked with, people that I worked with on Guiding Light, may have been surprised. But I remember one of the head writers for the show said to me, in my early sobriety, I said, did you know that I was a drunk? And she said, Michael, you changed from being the happy, funny Michael to the sloppy drunk Michael. Mm. And so, believe it or not, for this alcoholic, I needed to hear that, because for people who are addicts, we find people who co-sign our BS, you know, who say, you're great, you can have a beer, you don't have a problem. And then for me to hear somebody who was a friend of mine who wrote the show say, no, you are a sloppy drunk. I needed to hear that. Because for every addict, for every alcoholic, there's a part of you that thinks, you know what, I can control this. You know, I only drink on Thursdays, or I don't drink gin, I'll drink gin on, it's called the negotiation phase. Well, I'll smoke pot, I won't drink beer. And this is what addicts do. We negotiate with ourselves, and we find some other way. And it never works.
Yeah. Michael, I want to talk to you a little bit too along these lines with, you know, one of the things that all of us have to face in the journey, and that is the notion of powerlessness.
Right.
And I'm not talking about powerless in life. I'm talking very specifically powerless over our addiction, right? You know, that moment that arises where, and I think each of us has a different story about that, right? Right. But there's a moment by which you are so far down the scale, people call it a bottom, that the only thing you could do is admit you're powerless. How did that happen for you? Did that happen for you in that way?
Well, you raised, you know, the first step of the 12 steps is, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. So, and I'll include myself in this. I realized when I started to have a problem, I could say my life's unmanageable, but am I really powerless over alcohol? And that's why I think only 6 or 7% of people get sober. Mm-hmm. Because for Americans, specifically Americans, who, you know, say that they're powerless over anything is an oxymoron. You know, how can I be powerless over anything? It goes against everything that we are taught. We're ambitious. We're well-educated. In fact, I will say this caveat, the smarter you are, the harder you will get to be sober, by the way.
That's true.
Okay. my minister who talked to me, he helped me with my early recovery. He said the two caveats, the two biggest impediments for people getting sober are people who are really, really smart and people who've got a lot of money. So for men, you know, if you have your job and you're so-called functioning alcoholic, you can glide along until most men won't stop drinking until they lose their job, until they're in jail, until they lose everything. So back to your question, for me, when did I realize I was powerless? Just when it became a priority for me over everything, including my family.
Yeah.
You know, there's three phases of drinking. It's fun with problems, and then it's just problems.
Yeah.
And so we understand that, what am I doing at a bar at 4:30 in the afternoon? You know, and looking, and you're looking across the bar and you're seeing three people drinking and go, what is that loser doing over there? And you're the same loser. You're doing the same thing. So my drinkings went from like 4:30 in the afternoon to 40, and all of a sudden it started going back in 15-minute increments. I didn't drink in the morning, but listen, everybody's drinking looks different, you know? So the tendency for people who have drinking problems is, well, I'm not the guy with the brown bag under the bridge.
That's right.
That's what most high class alcoholics think. I'm not them. You know, that's the biggest impediment sometimes, is people don't want to get sober because they picture alcoholics as being losers without a job with the brown bag with a whiskey underneath the bridge. So I, to answer your question, is this all of a sudden it became my number one priority. You know, where am I going to drink on the weekends? Who am I going to hang out with? Who pours the best margarita? You know, it was a mess.
Yeah. Knowing the name of every label of every form of vodka or whatever your drink was that was ever created on the face of the earth, and then going on vacation at Disney World, and the first thing out of your mouth as you've just gotten off a plane and it's time for breakfast, and the first thing you ask is, where's the bar in Disneyland? Where can we go get a drink? And your horror is, there isn't one.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, you know, there's two phases. There's the actual drinking itself, and then there's the fantasy of the drink, the planning, as you say, of the drink. You know, planning the drink. And so for alcoholics and addicts, there's the actual consumption of whatever it is, and then there's the fantasy of it. Who am I going to hang out with, you know, on Friday? And so I had plenty of drinking buddies, and I couldn't wait. I love Mexican food, love it. But to me, Mexican wasn't Mexican until I had that frothy margarita with a salted glass margarita mix. You know, it's all part of the fantasy. And so, you know, margaritas, mine was the trifecta. It was tequila, vodka, and white wine. That was my devil's triangle. Mm.
And the foods that went along with it. One of the things that we realize in terms of whether or not we decide we have a problem with a drink or a drug is what you talked about, the fantasy and the preoccupation of not only while it's happening, but anticipating the next time it's going to happen, to make it an experience that you really want to get to. And that's something that you talked about. It's a very real thing. If you wake up in the morning thinking about what's going to happen at 5 o'clock, and how quickly you're going to get to the bar, then you have a serious problem. So this particular problem seemed to affect your entire life. Yes, relationships.
Yeah, it did. I mean, work, relationships. You know, they call it our spiritual condition. You know, I was physically, mentally, spiritually dead inside. And there's a time when every addict or alcoholic looks in the mirror. And I didn't see, I just saw this sort of walking dead person. That's the depths of despair. You know, they say the gates of hell, I think, for alcoholics, you know, and why we commiserate. I guess it's not unlike, and I don't know if this is an accurate analogy, but a breast cancer survivor can talk to a breast cancer survivor. They get it. They understand. They've been through it. An alcoholic can relate to another alcoholic because the depths of despair, physical, emotional, spiritual despair, it's not just the depths of hell. You go in hell because it's the darkest place, and there seems to be no hope. And that's why the disease is cunning, baffling, powerful, because it wants to isolate you from the world. You know, addiction is an isolator. It wants you to take you away from relationships and connectivity to humanity.
Yeah. Isn't this the great illusion as well? Because in the middle of our addiction, the great illusion is that it connects us. You know, it gives us a false sense of value and a false sense of what true connection really is. And, you know, I just want to say, and Owen, for you too, for those people that are listening, I must say that this truly is an act of courage. And there's a reason the three of us are here. And one of the reasons I know that I'm here is I have buried I've buried 3 siblings and a mom who committed suicide. And we have to be talking more about the reality of this, as opposed to what celebrity happened to get a sober coach that he or she never uses. And I want to say to you, you know, this is going to help so many people, right, Ellen? What, I mean, isn't this why you're doing the show?
This is exactly what the whole show is about. This is a show of no more secrets. It's all out in the open. What goes on, how we feel, and the hope that we do recover. I'm sitting here with decades of recovery. Michael is sitting here with almost a decade in recovery. And we are open and honest about the struggles, but most importantly, how we have come out on the other side. So it's not a secret for the whole world to see, and to see that there is hope about it, but we can't shove it under the rug and we can't not talk about it. It must be open. Not only the pain and the depth of the grief, but the hope and the rise of recovery. And that's the most important thing.
The people will say to me, "Oh, Michael, you got 7 years of sobriety. Congratulations. That's amazing." And I say to them, "No, my alcoholic, petulant, narcissistic child is in a timeout today." Yeah. So we call this thing, and it's called our ego. And I hear in the rooms, people will say, you know, alcoholics are egomaniacs with inferiority complex. And it's really true. Our biggest enemy, I think, in sobriety is our ego. You know, we want to run the show. We want to be the producer, director of our own life. And so back to Dr. Pat, your original question about this word surrender. So you go in and you say, "Okay, I don't know what this thing is, but if I can't have one glass, you know, I can't have one glass of Chardonnay. I have to drink the whole bottle and then something else after that. I can't drink like a normal person. You know, my brother-in-law has a peanut allergy. He can't have peanut butter. Okay, so I have an allergy to alcohol. I cannot pick up a glass of alcohol and drink normally. Now, my alcoholic self will say 6 months or a year from now, if I stop working my program, hey, I can have a wine spritzer. That wine has got, it's got a spritzer in it. It's, you know, that's the way we think."
Yeah.
So.
And it's actually beginning to change the way you think, feel, and act that keeps our recovery in remission. Talking with you about your admitting that you were powerless, and then moving on, I guess, to the next step of, in the 12 steps, it says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What does that mean to you, Michael? How did that apply to you?
Wow. Well, I will tell you, and it's really true, that it takes a while. I mean, I remember looking at those steps on the wall, and I was 2 years in before I saw the word sanity. You're so beaten up. You're so jammed up. You're so full of shame. All these things are going on. You're hurting so bad that sometimes you're just showing up, and you're not hearing what everybody else is saying, but you're showing up. And I remember looking up and seeing that other step, restore us to sanity. So the opposite of sanity is insanity. And so that's what my life was. It was insane. I was doing insane things. We lie to ourselves. What's this saying? If you keep telling the same lie over and over again, it becomes our truth.
Yeah.
You become, I don't know, you just lie about everything. And that was me, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But that's what you do. And the lies are all built around, I'm a fervent codependent, always trying to be a people pleaser people pleasing is like chasing a dog's tail. You know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you're never going, it's a dead end street. So, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. So, you know, and maybe at some measure, that's why I became an actor, is to get this sort of, fame, I guess, or this adulation. But somebody said to me, adulation's like eating cotton candy. It tastes great, but leaves your stomach empty. So it gets back to this true idea of what true intimacy and emotional, these having a true emotional attachment and relationship. You can't have that when you're drinking.
And going into the rooms and understanding that there is something else, something other than yourself that will give you relief. For me personally, going from that insanity state to the possibility of sanity was like a great exhale. Like, oh, thank goodness. I don't have to be on this treadmill anymore. Was that the same for you?
Yes. I was one of those alcoholics when alcohol was removed from my life. I didn't have withdrawals. That was probably a bad thing. I probably should have, because I thought, I don't feel so bad after all, you know? But what started to happen was I use the word bondage. You have this bondage relationship with this thing called alcohol. And all of a sudden when you remove yourself from it, there is a sense of relief. You hear people a lot in early sobriety going, there's this thing called the pink cloud. Everything is wonderful. Everything is beautiful because they've been removed from this thing. You know, all of a sudden, you know, my acid reflux stopped, right? I stopped, my insomnia stopped. But the real life consequences did not stop. And that's the thing that starts to happen. And you go, okay, this is, you know, sobriety is not the end all of, you know, you still have these problems that you have to walk through in your life, but you do it with a sober mind. You know, it's not a panacea where everything is wonderful and beautiful. But this is the way I describe it. There's despair and there's grief. I think when you're sober and you're in early sobriety, you should feel grief because you've hurt a lot of people. Despair is not having a program, not having any connectivity, not having a sober coach like you, Ellen, is not having a person to connect to. Sobriety is about connecting to another human being who's been through this or is an expert like you are, Ellen.
I was always told that the opposite of addiction is community. You must have people around you to support you in terms of a recovery coach, in terms of meeting rooms, in terms of community, people that are speaking your language, because we find it is a special language and something that that you learn as you go.
Exactly.
So were you a little nervous to come out into the community? You think your fans will...
Yes, yeah, I am. I am nervous. I guess part of the healing process is there'll always be a little part of grief that's in me a little bit, of what, you know, how my drinking affected the people I loved. I've had some very transparent conversations, some healing conversations with my, you know, beloved daughters about this, and, you know, my relationship with them is paramount and important. And it just, you know, I realize that it just takes time. And there's my family in Minnesota and my dear friends from Guiding Light who have been very, very supportive. I've been very blessed, you know. I call them my guardian angels, actually. I feel like I've had guardian angels around me my whole life, even when I was a hot mess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is the one point that I think is really important for us to really talk about, too, is that these guardian angels become more obvious to us when we're not drinking or we're not using. All of a sudden, we stop for a moment and look around and say, oh, no, you've been there for me. And I think that is really emotionally hard. This is part of recovery that we don't talk about enough, I don't think. And maybe when we come back from break, we can talk more about it. It's the moment when we realize and we look around and we have that sense, not always remembering everything, right? Mm-hmm. But we have that sense, wow, I did that to you. Yeah. Wow, I was like that there.
Right.
That's a different kind of awakening. And many people don't know that it's an integral part of recovery.
Right.
And somehow they think magically that people go through the magic doors of recovery. And on the other side, when they open it, there's the clouds of heaven, just all over there, the clouds of heaven. But what happens is we don't really talk enough about what happens to us as we change, both physically, emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, because that is what we do in recovery, isn't it? Isn't it, Ellen?
Yeah.
It's a full transformation. That's what it's all about. That's why Transformation Talk Radio is the perfect place to talk about recovery.
Yep.
It is mind, body, spirit.
It is. Ellen, why don't we take a short break? But before we do, let's have folks have some information here about you and the work you do. And then, we'll go to a short break and come back and pick this up.
Terrific. Follow me on pushybroadfromthebronx.com. You can book a recovery recharge phone call for me, especially during the holidays. Sometimes it's a very difficult time, a lot of partying, a lot of carrying on. Please look for me, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, or call my toll-free number, 800-889-1757.
One of the things I want to do, Michael, how do we follow you on Facebook?
I have an Instagram and Facebook page.
Okay.
You could do a friend request. Perfect. Think I'm pretty close to max out on Facebook, but certainly Instagram would probably be the best way.
All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be looking at what does this mean? How do we get from that place, that moment where we've seen ourselves in a mirror, the realization of that, that point of surrender, that admission that some level of help is needed and it's not me? What do we do then? Is it possible to go from that place, those places that you don't want to think about some days, but you must face? Is it possible to come out the other side and truly step in to the brilliance of recovery? I'm going to let Ellen talk about that. And Michael, when we come back, everybody, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tap into the wisdom of animals, angels, and masters with Darcy Pariso on Animal Soul Wisdom Radio. Tune in monthly as Darcy brings insights on how to better understand and deepen our relationships with animals. Working with light and pureness of ancient techniques, Darcy, healer, animal communicator, and medium, is here to guide you through this process and provide inspiration to move forward. For more information about working with Darcy, visit darcypariso.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Are you truly ready to experience overflow in every area of your life? Are you ready to go from limited to limitless? Imagine starting your week off with a deeper connection to the God consciousness. It's time for you to feel inspired, uplifted, and shifted. I invite you to join me, Tracy L., online or in person for our Soul Sundays. Start your week off feeling empowered and ready to serve and expand the miracles waiting for you.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Stop circling around difficult issues and find out what's been holding you back. Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Ober. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Ober. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyober.com. That's drkathyober.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Recovery Recharge. I get to do this fabulous show with the most amazing Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Today, Michael O'Leary is our very special guest. Ellen, before we dive back into this, I want to be very clear about the work that you do to help people, both folks in recovery and their families. Could you again say something about that and let folks know how to get a hold of you?
Folks can get a hold of me easily by going to pushybroadfromthebronx.com. They can make a phone call with me and you're going to get me. I do work in family and parental support. I work with addicts coming out of treatment and alcoholics. I work with people that want to sustain their recovery. They may be in a relapse situation, or you have a family member that needs help and you do not know how to help them. That's why I am here. Go to the website or call me toll free, 800-889-1757. I'm here for you. The Pushy Broad is here.
Thank you for saying that because people, here's the thing I want to say about Ellen's work. You might even know what the question is that you're seeking an answer to. Families, friends don't know. They don't know what the questions are. Folks in recovery sometimes don't know. It could be something as a matter of you're getting ready for the holidays. You don't know how to get through it. And the reason I want to mention this, and Michael, I think it's great for you to talk about it, is this is a time when you are in recovery or you're with others in recovery. You don't know what you don't know. And that's why you call somebody like Ellen. Because you've got to have somebody to work with on this. This is not a solo journey. I'd like to hear what both of you all have to say about that.
Michael?
No, not at all. I mean, I have a sponsor. Listen, this is the holidays, and this is a difficult time for any person in recovery. And so, I would call Ellen or my sponsor and you make a phone call before you go out to an event with alcohol and you call afterwards. You have a plan. You cannot be in recovery and not have a plan. You have to have a sponsor. You have to have a recovery coach. You have to have a plan. I go to a meeting I get up 6 o'clock, 6:15 every day, and I go to a meeting, 7 a.m. That's how I start my day. If I'm going to, listen, I've been around a lot of alcohol recently that's been around, and I'll just remove myself. I'll just walk away if I feel uncomfortable. Now, I don't feel like drinking today, but at the same time, it's like I said, if you go to a barber enough times, you're going to get a haircut. So I just don't go to, I don't hang out at bars. If I'm with a friend, I'll go to a bar. But I'm very, very careful. For example, I'm going to give you this one story. I'm going to a meeting about 2 months ago. And I'm driving along and I hear this commercial for Heineken Zero. And I go, wow, Heineken Zero. And they go, you could drink this in the car and not get arrested by a police officer because there's zero alcohol in this. So what does this alcoholic do? I pull off to the side of the road and I start Googling Heineken Zero. I can have a beer again. No, Michael, I can't have a Virgin Mark. I can't have a fake beer. That's going down. You see how I'm talking about? This is how we think. So, you constantly have to be vigilant. And that's why, Ellen has been such a blessing to me. Ellen talks in what I call beautiful shorthand. You can go to a therapist for an hour, spend $1 zillion. I go to Ellen and she'll talk to me in like 10 minutes. I'm off the phone. I go, she just gave me the answer. Sobriety is shorthand. Sobriety is like usually two sentences. And a lot of times I heard from my sponsor, don't do that, Michael. Don't send that email. Don't do that, Michael. 99% of what I didn't do was the best thing I did do in my during my early sobriety.
Exactly. Yeah. And being a pushy broad, that's kind of the method I work with. That, right? That part cheerleader, you can do it, and drill sergeant, but don't do it. Just all of that at the same time.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about the kinds of change you've made well beyond just not picking up the drink or the drug.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what do addicts, alcoholics do when they do get in recovery? You find another fix. And for me, it was food. So I went from 215 pounds to 260 pounds because I found a new thing to try to fill that hole inside of me. And I've lost, with the help of my fiance, I've lost 45 pounds because I had to have, like, Michael, you were just replacing one thing with the other thing. And for some, it's tobacco or whatever, gambling or perfectionism. You know, this is not just about alcohol. It's about, you know, what are you in bondage to? Is it about perfectionism, being right? Is it exercise? Is it gambling? You know, so anybody's listening,
right?
Anybody's listening to the show today, it's like, well, I'm not, you know, I don't drink. It's like, okay, what is controlling your life? You know, that's the question we have to ask ourselves every day.
Yeah. You know, this is really interesting, but it's also really important what you said, because this is one of these known, this little thing here is so important that you just shared. And the reason it's important is because we don't talk enough about it, or the public doesn't get to hear about it. We talk about it, but the public doesn't get to hear about the multi levels, what I call the 50 shades of addiction, right? You know, because here you are, maybe you get, let's say you get sober in New York like I did. Here you are. And the next thing you know, you're in Manhattan and you're thinking, oh, I think it's going to be a really good idea for me to go down the village and hit every coffee cafe and have dessert like five times. And it doesn't dawn on you until somebody points out to you, you're transferring an urge. And I think that is so important today to talk about that, because I think we're seeing that continued search for comfort outside of ourselves. And this recovery is not about that, is it, Ellen, Michael?
No, it's not. But it is about learning what the addictive brain is all about.
Yeah.
Anything that you focus on that one would consider obsessive. I could go down Fifth Avenue for Christmas and wind up in Bloomingdale's and spend everything I have just because. Or you can let your fingers do the walking and go online on Black Friday or Cyber Monday and lose your entire paycheck and maybe your mortgage money. That's just as serious a problem as whether or not you have an alcohol or drug addiction. So recovery coaching really is learning how to understand every single kind of addictive behavior. There are so many people that I work with that tell me, well, I can't relate to this. I mean, if somebody wants to stop drinking, let them just stop drinking. Or what are you doing drugs for? That's ridiculous. But there are so many other things that people get involved with that have those things rule their lives. And that comes from an addictive brain. And that's what a recovery coach does, shows you how to temper that addictive brain and put it in remission.
Yeah. And I think it's really important that we are talking about this to both of you, because I want to get back to, Michael, something you said, especially around this. If you have a coach and you have a program and you have a sponsor, boy, you have got to be committed to showing up. What is it in the big book that's also in the Bible? I never forgot this because it was also in The Walking Dead. Faith without works is dead. And I will tell you that for the first 10 years of going to meetings, I didn't read it that way. This is what happens to your brain. So I read it, faith without works is death. And that was good for somebody like me. But the point is, you've got to have the belief, but you got to do the work. got to do the work. You got to work with other people. You got to do the things, one thing in front of the other, because in your perspective, Michael, and for you, Ellen, we can have an extraordinary life. And I think that's got to be the message too today, isn't it?
Absolutely. We come forward and not only an extraordinary life, but a life that we have never experienced before. Yes. So it's a brand new life, but as quickly as we can hold on to it, it will disappear if we don't recharge it. And that's what recovery is all about. You have to practice, because it has to be continual, because our addictive brain will catch up to us and always take us down. So Michael and I have been practicing recovery recharged for about 7 years now, on and off when you need me. And I know it's brought you into a whole new world. I'd like you to tell us a little bit about this award-winning play that is specifically about recovery and forgiveness and redemption.
Right. Well, I remember I went to a coffee shop in the morning and I just wrote this monologue down. And I think, you know, women are so good at journaling. And I don't know if I was actually thinking of writing a play, but I just wrote down this this poem, actually, that was meant for my daughter. And then all of a sudden, this thing started coalescing into a play. And I realized that I really was writing this play because I wanted so much to be restored with my daughters, and to be forgiven, and really the shame, the deep shame, which is the thing that keeps people out there, you know. So all of a sudden, you know, it started just becoming a healing process, starting to write this. And I got it, my friends from Guiding Light, if it wasn't for them, this play would never be where it was, specifically Beth Chamberlain, Grant Alexander, and Tina Sloan. I went to them with this 23-page play. I entered it in the Manhattan Repertory contest. My dear friend said yes. We put the play up and it won first place as a one act at Manhattan Repertory. And then shortly after that, we went to Maryland. Lower Shore was kind enough to sponsor it. It's a nonprofit theater group. We put the play up. It got an amazing review from a Washington, D.C. theater critic. And then shortly after that, I sent the play off to director Larry Moss, who's coach for Leonardo DiCaprio, Helen Hunt, Hilary Swank. He's considered one of the preeminent acting teachers, directors in the world. And I thought, well, all he could do is say no, you know. So I hunted down his assistant. I sent the play out. A month later, I see no caller ID on my phone, and I think it's a creditor or something. And lo and behold, it's Larry Moss. And Larry said, I read your play. It's beautiful. How can I be a part of it? And lo and behold, 2 years later, working with Larry, we workshopped it. And about a month ago, he says it's ready. And actually, I'm talking to him at 4 o'clock today to see what the next steps are.
Mm. So the name of the play
is really about, and it's called Breathing Under Dirt, because in the play, the protagonist receives forgiveness from her mother, and she passes. And the burden of guilt and shame and forgiveness was lifted from her in life. So the point of the play is to reach forgiveness and reconciliation with the ones that we love while we're still alive. You know, I think in the South, or sometimes they say making peace. In the program, it's called Making Amends. But it's all about that process. And somebody like Ellen, you have to kind of get some sobriety under your belt before that process actually happens, because no one wants to hear, I'm sorry, when you've hurt them so badly.
No.
You're sorry. You make your amend by not drinking a day at a time. That's how you get people to trust you again. So that's a snapshot of the play. And I'm just very grateful that, you know, we have a chance to be produced in New York.
Oh, it's exciting.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. But, you know, also too, your creative juices have returned in many ways. You know, your fortitude, your stamina, the ability to get things done, which sometimes is so difficult when you're under the influence. No matter how much one thinks they're a functioning alcoholic or a functioning right. addict or a functioning human being. But all of this was returned to you in so many ways. And on a personal level, how are your relationships now, Michael?
Great. I mean, great. Well, I say great. They're improved. It's a process. I'm engaged to be married to this absolutely lovely lady who I met about a year and a half ago. Actually, I'm in my soon-to-be stepson's room here upstairs. So my relationships are amazing. My relationships with my friends are amazing. You know, I've made amends to them. You know, life is so rich. Like, how do you describe sobriety? Sobriety, it's like somebody says, you can taste food. You can, the colors are brighter. You could sit still and be still and know that I am God. Mm-hmm. I can be still and people say, what are you thinking about? I'm not thinking about anything. I have actually I have peace between my 2 ears now, you know, because I've done the work that the program asked me to do. So, you know, sobriety is awesome. It's my top priority. And, you know, drunks are selfish, but the irony about sobriety is you have to be selfish to keep it. You have to keep doing it or you lose it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is a really good point. And I think this really, really talks to Ellen, the work you do with families, because I don't know what you have found on your journey, but I remember early on not being able to talk about things very much because I really didn't know. I mean, you know, first year, second year, whatever that is, you don't know. And it was so interesting back then how people just don't know and want to just give you a drink and say it's just one drink or maybe even overreact and not bring out any drinks. And I mean, there's such a level of learning and understanding that has to go on between the individual that's in recovery and the folks around them. But in the end, what you're talking about is what the three of us are talking about. There is a rainbow with a pot of gold. There really is.
There is, and it's a really good thing. We do develop a language, though, like Dr. Pat is saying, like Michael is saying, and it's extremely important that the people around us learn that language and they can identify with it. There are so many unanswered questions that people have, and it's so easy to talk to them in a way that really, truly can help them, which is why the family and parental support piece of recovery coaching is really essential for every single family member. Truly transforms lives.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take our problem, let's say, as an active addict or an addict in recovery and separate us from the family. We want to bring the family in on it. We want to make it a together situation. And not only that, but it helps rebuild relationships between family members.
Yeah.
And the greatest gift of all.
Yeah.
Because there's always a rift. Yeah.
I remember the first time I ever refused to go to a wedding, like a big wedding. And it was way number of years ago. But it was something that for me, it would have been the kiss of death for me because I was wedding crazy. I was almost like the Wedding Crasher movie, right? Where you find the weddings to go to because, and I remember the first time that I had to say, you know, I'm going to go to the church, but I'm not going to be able to go to the reception. I think that that's having those conversations is extremely difficult. And that's where the support and help comes in, because that's not the only conversation, Ellen, Michael. There are thousands of those conversations, which we've never had to have. And we do now.
Yes. Because the more we open up what recovery is like, and the more people like Michael, especially in a celebrity fashion, is open and honest about who they are, the more comfortable we are about talking to our, you know, about ourselves, and the more comfortable a family member is talking about it. There's no longer a 6-degree separation when it comes to addiction. Like Michael was saying in the beginning, there's no longer just imagining this Bowery bum with a bottle of alcohol, or this addict with a needle in his arm down in, you know, down in the dregs of New York City.
Right.
It transforms. It transcends race, color, creed, gender, whatever. Right.
I think I read something just the other day that 1 out of 6 of people under 30 years old are addicts. 1 out of 6.
Yeah. So
that's a lot.
No, that I think I read that too. Yeah. I think I read something like that too. That's a number we should say again. What do you, you read 1 out of 6. I think I read 1 out of 5, but you read 1 out of 6, Michael.
Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, nearly, you know, 15-20% of our population of under 30 are addicted to something.
That's
stunning. It's no longer this 9%. We're, you know, it's going up, and now we have the vaping, and it's just which I think is just criminal.
My gosh.
That kids are exposed to this type of stuff, and they're dying, and somehow this stuff is propagated, you know, to our young people. So
but isn't that why we're doing this show? I mean, isn't that one of the reasons why, Ellen, you're doing this show? This is something where you said we've got to talk about it. And Michael, for you to come on today and talk about it, and for me to talk about it, for the three of us to talk about it. We have seen some things where people do not have the hope and support you're offering, Ellen. We've seen what happens. You know, I've seen what happens. You know, I've seen women walk into a meeting with a gun and end their lives because they just don't know how to connect the dots. And I'm not sure, Ellen, I know you've been doing this a long time, but I'm not sure that you know how valuable what you do really is right now, and the way you do it. And Michael, you speaking out and knowing what Ellen does. We cannot say enough about the work you do. And you, I know you're passionate about it, but it's not even optional anymore. It's an ultimatum for living, isn't it?
It is. It has to be a constant. To be loud and proud and counted. On the other side, of course, there's 1 out of 6 of us that are still suffering, but there is 27 million of us in recovery in the globe. Why aren't we talking about that? If we look to positive outcomes and talk about recovery with pride and passion, people want to go there.
It's truly, if I were to say, people who know me, who watch the show, who are just listening today, who are suffering or in pain, and I would say the same thing my sponsor says to me, is that you don't have to feel this way anymore. There's no reason to feel shame. There's millions of people just like you who are feeling the same thing, most of which will not make the phone call to somebody. We all know somebody who knows somebody who's an alcoholic. So it's really about picking up the phone. This phone for us, for people who are addicted, is like an anvil. And that's what I did in early sobriety. I picked this phone up, and I have probably 30 men's names on this phone, and I call. And every time I call, they always say, "Thank you for calling, Michael." And it's not BS. They really, I help. It's the reciprocation of the program. We help each other that way. And oddly enough, ironically, people who don't get it help me too.
Yeah.
It's just a reminder that, you know, the people that don't get it don't get to that very first step, which we, you and I, and the three of us go, why won't they do it? But that's the cunning, baffling, powerful part of this disease.
Yes, it is. Yes, well, it is.
Yes, there is. And now there is wonderful help available. And I cannot thank you enough, Michael, for with us today, and for working a strong program with me over the years and sustaining a wonderful life in recovery. And congratulations on all of your successes and accomplishments. And I know continuing to recharge your recovery, those things will continue one day.
Pat, thank you, Dr. Pat, for providing this this vehicle for people. This is a very important thing. Yeah. There's not enough of these type of shows out there that I'm even aware of. So this is a very important thing that you're doing.
You know, in the spirit of somebody that helped me was sort of an outcast, somebody that had to step away, that decided to talk about this on television, that became iconic for me in my journey, Marty Mann. And what we can learn from Marty is that this is a, these conversations, we must have them so people can hear them now. And I think that's what we're doing. I want to thank you for doing that, Ellen, for you to do that.
You've been listening to Recovery Recharged with certified life and recovery coach, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Don't miss your next opportunity to let me help you recharge your recovery, let go of your secrets, and change the way you think, feel, and act right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com.